If you're the child of a police officer and you've got a law degree, you'd think you'd have a pretty good idea of the legal system and how justice works in this country. Bree Lee is that person. After she finished her law degree, she went to work as a judge's associate on the court circuit in Queensland. But that's where she started to see another side to the justice system, and one that prompted her to confront an incident in her own past that she'd always vowed she'd keep secret. Bree has written about this in a memoir called Eggshell Skull, and it's a real insight into what it's like to be part of the justice system from the outside and the inside. Bree, hello, good to have you with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, we're all, I guess, shaped by our parents one way or another, but what role do you think your dad, a police officer, had in your idea of justice?
Yeah, I mean, my dad had this line that he would always tell us kids never to look for justice. But, you know, when you're small, your parents seem so big, and in particular, my dad in this, you know, crisp uniform, and he was always so self-disciplined. And he, you know, people from around the neighborhood would come and knock on our door when they needed advice about things. And just the sheer physical figure that he cut, and in combination with his really strict ideas about right and wrong, and that sort of my brother and I guess were raised on this idea that actions have consequences. And
and you grew up with a clearly defined idea of right and wrong.
Absolutely. Definitely.
And then what prompted you to want to study law, Bree? Was this your father's influence too, or broader than that?
I think, to be honest, I think my parents tried to talk me out of it because, you know, it's obviously can be quite grueling. But for me, it was a real need to do work that felt significant, or that I felt was really getting in amongst what it means to be human. And if you care about, I guess, conflict and conflict resolution, there's not a better place to see that than in the courts.
Well, after graduating, you got this work as a judge's associate. It's one of those positions that's entry level but very highly competitive to get. You went on the circuit in country Queensland. So what kinds of towns were you visiting, and what was that experience like?
Yeah, it was really challenging. So circuit is when people in regional and remote areas have the right to have their legal matters heard in the town in which they live. But obviously some of these places don't have populations that can sustain a permanently sitting judge. And so for 2 weeks at a time, the judge I worked for and I would go out to places like Gympie, Roma, Gladstone, some slightly bigger ones like Bundaberg or Southport. But we would just go to these places, and we would land, and we would have a list of matters that had been waiting for us to arrive. And then we would do our absolute best to clear that list, because once we left, it would be another X number of months until those people got to have their matters heard again.
Well,
and
was it for you? I mean, I know you heard a lot of abuse cases, for example, didn't you? Children and women. Did it shock you how regularly those kinds of cases were coming up?
Yes, absolutely. It's shocking. The judge I worked for, unfortunately and accurately, described sex offences and child sex offences as the bread and butter of the district court. And it just absolutely clogs the system. The rate in general for people to plead guilty to criminal offences is about 70%, but that drops down to about 30% for sex offences and child sex offences. So what you see is just so many of these matters where people refuse to plead guilty, just clogging up the system. And honestly, it didn't take me very long of doing that work either to see that really obvious patterns were emerging. It was very, very often mum's new boyfriend or a stepfather figure in the family, always an older male and a younger female, almost always, and just definitely always a person in a position of trust offending within a domestic setting.
Well, now, Bree, it was during this time on the court circuit that you came to a decision about something that happened to you as a child. What was the nature of the incident?
Yeah, so what happened to me was a one-off. It wasn't a situation of a long-term, you know, grooming or maintaining a relationship issue, but it was two counts of indecent treatment of a child by my older brother's friend, who, so it was when I was in primary school and he was significantly older. He was a teenager.
So it was sexual assault?
Yes, yes, yep.
And up until this point, as you're working as a judge's associate, you'd never told anyone about this?
No, I hadn't. And very much had convinced myself or gotten myself into a headspace where I thought, I'm fine. You know, why would I poke that bear? I've got my law degree, I've got a good job, I've got a boyfriend. You know, what good could it possibly do to drag this thing up out of the deep? But then when I was an associate, every single week I would be in a new trial and a handful of new sentences, just seeing this material, this child sex and sex offence material in front of me. And it got to a point where I could not do anything about it.
Yeah. So what you were hearing in court all day would have been, you know, become personally very difficult to hear, I imagine. So that's what made you decide to go to the police at this particular time in your life?
Yeah, it was a combination of seeing so much of that content every day, but then also being really struck by the courage of all the complainants I saw in court. Because as many cases as there were defendants, obviously there are also complainants, and I would just listen. There was one in particular, a complainant who read out loud to the court a victim impact statement after their trial, and it just, the closure and relief that complainant spoke about, I nearly started crying in the courtroom then and there. That's exactly what I longed for.
Mm. Well, now, on the advice of the police, you did what's called a pretext call. Can you tell us what that is, what that means?
Yeah, so I had seen pretext phone calls in the courtroom when defence lawyers were trying to get them ruled out, because they're very, very powerful pieces of evidence when they work. And just all it means is that you're sitting in the cop shop and you place a phone call to the defendant, to the person that you've accused of this crime, and you know that the phone call is being recorded by the police, but they don't. And mm-hmm. you just try to get them to admit what they've done. And then that recording will be tendered as evidence if the matter does go to trial. And so I did a pretext phone call. It was terrifying. It sounds silly, and I reflect on the book that it seemed a bit silly to be so afraid, because you're sitting, you know, in a safe office in a police station, like surrounded by cops, but it's just to confront.
No, I can still imagine
Yeah.
Well, what happened in that call?
So not only did he apologise, which is an admission, but he also told me two things that had huge effects. One was that he himself had been abused as a child, and also, though, that I wasn't the only one who he had interfered with.
So how difficult was it to process those two pieces of information, apart from his admission in regards to you?
Really, really difficult, in particular to know what to do with this new information that he was also a victim of child sex abuse, because until then I had been really leaning on the idea in my head that I was the good guy and he was the bad guy. And for a while after that phone call, I really had a moral, I guess, internal fight happening, where I just all of a sudden couldn't be sure that I was the good guy. And what was I getting out of this? Why would I put him through this if he was also a victim? And
yes.
It took me a really, really long time.
Well, it's not that you weren't the good guy. It's that he was both the bad guy and the good guy in a sense. You know, he was both victim and perpetrator, which puts a different cast on it for you, I guess, yeah?
Yeah. And also I just eventually got to the stage where I realised that it was his right to do or not do something about what happened to him. And that is a distinct thing from my right to do something about what happened to me.
Right.
And also I just went into the statistics and found that overwhelmingly women are victims of sex and child sex offences. And although the cycle of abuse is true, it's still overwhelmingly men offending, even when they have been abused. So I just, yeah, dug my heels in, I suppose.
Well, Bree, can we just talk a bit more about the whole process of going to the police and taking this to court? First of all, how did you find your experience of dealing with the police? And I guess I'm thinking back to, you know, your father being a policeman. I think that your first phone call that you know, where you detailed your complaint wasn't returned from the police and you had to go through the complaint all over again. It sounds like it was probably a fairly distressing experience.
Absolutely. It was really abysmal, to be honest. When I finally worked up the courage, which, as you can probably imagine, took a long time, and just to psych yourself up to pick up the phone and punch in those numbers, I spoke to somebody on the phone, had to detail everything that had happened to me, had to, you know, relive the telling of that story, give all my personal details. And I was told that as soon as they had the time and resources, somebody from the CIB, the Criminal Investigations Branch, would get right back to me. And I gave it a couple of weeks and nobody had got back to me. And so I had to psych myself up again, call again. And they just had no record of my first phone call.
Mm.
And so I just, there were examples like that all the way through what eventually took 2 years, where my matter could have so easily fallen through the cracks had I not been so assertive, or had I not had such a strong support network, or had I not known how the system worked.
Well, it certainly took a long time after that for the matter to get to court. And even for someone who's been involved in the court system, were you shocked by the process?
Yes, yes. I knew that it would be... I knew that there was pretty much no chance it would take less than a year, for example. I knew that it's absurd that that's a delay that can be expected. It's the normal thing. But when we got the pretext phone call, I definitely thought that would, you know, be it. He's on the phone saying sorry, and that I wasn't the only one. But he, before he was even charged, when he found out that this was being investigated, he hired a solicitor and a barrister, and he made my life hell for 2 years because he had the financial resources to be able to do so.
Well, Bree, on the day the verdict came down, and I'm not going to give away what the verdict was because that will kind of spoil the reading of the book for anyone who wants to do so. But just tell us, what was it like for you to walk into that courtroom and waiting for the verdict?
It was so frightening, and that was my arena. I had worked not only in that building, but in that courtroom, courtroom 24, level 7. I knew that place. I knew how it all worked. If anyone should have the least reason to be frightened, it would be me. But pushing those doors open and having the courtroom silent, ready to receive my testimony and to then be cross-examined, I don't know how we expect anybody to go through that process, who is already afraid of how alien and, you know, scary and intimidating that situation is. And I already knew how it all worked. It's cruel.
So what does that experience teach you then about the way justice is served in this day and age, particularly for women and children, I guess? I mean, how could it be done better?
Oh, I have so many ideas, some of which I'm trying to put into action already. There are really simple things. But one of the big problems, I would say, for women and child complainants for sexual offences is that juries are looking for, air quotes, evidence in the way that they've seen on TV shows. And the trouble with that is that juries want to see things like CCTV footage or, you know, bruises and cuts or DNA evidence. And the trouble is what we know about the vast majority of sex offences is that they happen without the use of a weapon and inside a domestic home. So you just don't get any of those kind of, you know, again, quote marks, hard evidence the way people expect. And it, without fail, makes it extremely difficult for women and children to access justice in the same way that other crimes committed can have justice done. And there are a whole lot of things that we can do to mitigate that, in my opinion. And I talk about them a lot in the book.
Well, Bree, do you feel personally resolved about all this now for you? I mean, has it made a difference to you on balance, you know, to have taken your case to court?
I feel invincible now. Regardless of how it turned out, the fact that I stood up and made that accusation, that I pointed that finger, that the man who offended against me is no longer enjoying the trust and love of my family, the fact that I at least got to hear him apologize on the phone, and the fact that I knew that he had a clean criminal record, even though I wasn't the only one he offended against, I think that I've done a good thing by at least making a complaint so that whenever the others come forward, if they ever do, they won't have to go through the process of him having a completely clean record ever again.
And Bree Lee is the author of Eggshell Skull. Now, that title is also explained early in her book. I'll let you read about that. Bree, it's very good to talk to you. Thank you so much for being with us here in Life Matters.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And if this conversation has raised any issues for you, there's the 24-hour domestic violence and sexual assault hotline. The number is 1-800-RESPECT, 1-800-RESPECT or 1-800-737-732. Those numbers are also on the Life Matters, that number rather is also on the Life Matters website.